For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. 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 For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
Welcome back to The Clink and our final episode in this season. This is part two of Brent's chat with Ron Isherwood and his real story of redemption.
What about, Ron, that I mean, we talk about the green light. And I look, I don't want to get down the rabbit hole of it all, but I see by the look on your face, you're relating, I can get that feel.
I thought about Henry as soon as you said that.
Well, I wasn't there, and I was privy to meeting a lot of gentlemen who I call, and, you know, I was a kid on the streets that was basically brought in and raised by old knockabouts. So I got to hear and see a lot of things at the end of a lot of these gentlemen's lives or times of their major crimes. So I understand it. You talk about a green light. So technically, if you weren't on their green list, we'll call it, and maybe paying them or doing what they wanted you to do in return favors, is if that's, quote me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You were then the outcast and the enemy, yourself, someone that refused to be stood over or told how to do what you wanted to do.
Yeah. So, but before drugs. Simo, they tried to get you to do armed robberies for him.
Mm.
See, Nettie started doing armed robberies for him first. Because I remember they come and questioned me over a diamond robbery in Melbourne in the early 70s and said to me, listen, we can fucking, you know, you got a bit of dash, you know, we like this before I became a heroin addict. And they said, up here it's different because I came from Melbourne to Sydney. They said, we run the show up here. We can steer you into stick-ups. We can tell you who's armed. We can tell you what day, what time the vans are coming. Most of those were payrolls. And I started laughing. I said, mate, I'll come out of there one day and be cocking me in and said, you'll blow my head off. I said, I don't work with the police. I didn't even pay the police. I don't, you know.
This would have been something, though, that you've been around all your life anyway. Like, what really would excite you to want to go and do any crime that would involve police when your whole life has been
hatred.
Anti against the police, you do fucking nothing with them or around them. You despise them as much as you did. And here you are getting told you won't be able to do anything unless you're through us. Like, you'd be the last person to say, yeah, okay, sweet.
You can't work in our state. If you don't work with us, you don't work in our state.
They obviously knew your background.
Yes. Yeah. And they knew that I'd been found not guilty of shooting police. I'd been found not guilty of shooting criminals. You know, I'd been not guilty of this. And they knew that I don't, you know, I'm not going to talk to them. I'm not going to have a conversation, you know.
But you don't muck around. You're a man of your word. You hold your own, and it's as simple as that.
I just, mate, as I said to you, I don't believe for one minute that all I did was what I believed was right.
Yeah.
What I believed was right, you know. I can honestly say there's only a couple of times in my whole life that I ever did anything to go against my own personal principles. Even when I was using, you know, I mean, I didn't hurt innocent people. I didn't fucking, you know, fuck my mates' girls. I didn't, you know, rob my mates. And, you know, I was really, really strict with those principles.
Yep.
But the sad part was it was a one-sided affair. Other people didn't have the same rules.
Tell you, someone that did have rules like that who's passed on, God love him, and I had the privilege of Bernie. Bernie Matthews. Mate, he is the only notorious fucking, mate, the guy, for what he went through, and you, obviously, with Garth Grafton and all the experience that you went through was that era, so you know, beyond.
Yeah.
That man had been tortured and everything. I mean, the one thing he still said was, I never went into a bank to hurt anyone. I never shot anyone.
Yeah.
I never went in there to harm or hurt anyone.
Business.
And that was something, even to the day before he passed, he would still say, you know, never once did he say, oh, look, you know, oh, this happened or that happened, or I really meant to do this. And it's, I understand it. I get it.
I say it all the time. I never harmed anybody intentionally in any way. But if I was in the midst of protecting myself or my family, I would do something.
Yeah. It was as it was.
And you know what? Today's the same. If somebody came to harm me or my family, I would react. You have to.
Yeah.
That's nature. That's being a human being. That's being a male. That's being, you know, well, fucking, you know, like, I never wanted to be a gangster. I don't want to be a gangster. I don't want to be a tough guy. But what I want to be is honest and truthful.
Yeah.
I don't want to be able to tell the truth.
And be left to live. Just live your life.
Yeah.
Don't come and put. And I'm exactly the same. People say, you know, I'm not that guy, mate. My heart is full. I'm a dad.
Yep.
I'm a giver. I love helping. I love listening. I've been compassionate. I've found how to love many, many years ago from being very cold. And I love feeling helping others is good.
Yeah.
Don't come poke me. I don't need that. I don't want that. We don't need that. You know. It just.
I don't like people to rob drug dealers.
Yeah.
You know, they're out there taking the odds of getting pinched, and then you want to run in and fucking take it off them. That's not my idea of, you know, folks going, you know, Jimmy Driscoll. I don't know if you remember Jimmy Driscoll. His name was James Longus Driscoll. He was the head of the Toe Cutters. Blokes would do good armed robberies. Then he'd kidnap them and cut their toes off and take their fucking money off them. This is back in the 80s.
Wow.
You know, and I did time with Jimmy Driscoll before. He's an Englishman. And he was a psychopath, you know. And I said, he borrowed a machine gun off my old man and went into the fucking nightclub in Sydney and shot it up in the air. I don't know what the roof did to him, but why would you shoot the roof? You know what I mean? I'm that sort of person. I don't know what, you know, I don't understand shooting a roof or a car or, you know, fucking, I don't understand that stuff.
It's a waste of a pellet.
But the coppers gave him back the gun. So he paid money and got the machine gun back off the coppers. This is back in the 80s with the coppers in Sydney, in the 70s, I should say. And my old man said to me, oh, Jimmy lost one of the Owen guns, but sweet, we got it back. And I said, throw it in the river. He's like, what? I said, what, you don't think they got the ballistics on that? I said, throw it in the fucking river. I said, that's no good to anyone. You know, like the coppers have had it. They've done ballistics with it. Don't worry about that.
100%. 100%.
And then they give it back to him because he paid him a couple of grand to get it back.
So they've made an earn off him as well. They've got everything's registered with the gun to the bloke.
They've given the gun back to my old man and said, yeah, there's the gun back. And the old man's like, it's sweet. It's not sweet. Throw the fucking thing in the river, you know. Like, common sense tells you that gun's no good. No?
Yeah.
But, yeah, but the part that the reason that I am here today is because that life stopped. And I got out of that life and I stayed out of it for a long time. And I got pinched in 2002 again.
And that's, is that for importation?
That's for the importation of coke. And I got involved with some people and blah, blah. Cut a long story short, greed and short memory got me back involved. You know what I mean? I got myself back involved. I didn't need to. I was financially well off. I was fucking married and I had a beautiful little six-year-old daughter and my life was really good.
Can I just ask you, you were a jeweller? You are a jeweller by trade?
I own a jewellery company. I've designed jewellery for 35 years, 40
years. Okay, so you've got that. You're also a fantastic, what's the word? Well, you're not a mechanic, are you?
I'm a restoration guy.
Restoration builder of some amazing cars.
You know, some of my babies.
There we go. For everybody that can't see, I can see, but there's plenty of pictures on your wall. Thanks for that, Ron.
These are all my babies, yeah.
And you're not using?
No.
At this stage in your life. So you've got no reason really to be getting drawn back into this lifestyle.
No.
You've actually taken steps that technically probably should have been dead. I say that with respect, but the life that you lived, how the fuck you didn't die from either a heroin overdose or somebody taking you out.
Or the coppers or them. Or the kings,
exactly. Whatever. You know, like is just a blessing in itself.
Yeah. I believe this is a divine intervention to all this.
Yeah. Wow.
I do. I believe there's a higher power that kept me alive all 100%. This time
to make a difference in other people's lives. Yeah.
To the people who are just like me. That don't think they can change because I didn't think I could change. In 1981, I went to a rehab, straight from jail to a rehab. They took me to 12-step programs. They were okay. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed them. Some pretty girls were going there, so of course I'm going to enjoy them.
Here's your addiction, women.
Yeah. But what I found was over the last 40 years was that the drugs weren't the problem. I'm the problem. Everybody who goes to rehabs and to all these places to change their – to stop using drugs. But once you stop using drugs, you find out that that's when the madness begins. That's why you fucking use drugs.
To suppress those pain.
To cope with your inability to cope.
Yep.
You know, so it's usually through trauma or some other reason that we turn to a substance to change the way we feel. And it doesn't have to be drugs. We can be addicted to food. We can be addicted to sex. We can be addicted to gambling. We can be addicted to fighting. We can be addicted to everything if that's our personality. So what we have to deal with is why do we need this reason to use something to change the way we feel?
I love what you just said there. I've lived with PTSD, obviously, with my traumas, being sexually abused and the abuse that I went through as a young person to, you know, a lot of things in my early 20s. Bipolar, I'm not medicated today. I'm a legal cannabis, medical cannabis user, never been a smoker. So for me, it is truly for medicinal purposes. One thing I have found is, you talk about addiction, I still have that mindset. For example, I get out of jail and I said, I'm going to be the first in the world to cycle across Australia, 4,500 kilometers. I fucking did it. You know, what am I going to do next? I needed a high, so I go and ride around Tassie. Jump back in the ring, you know, at a late age in my life and start having more Muay Thai fights. Like, I just, on the weekend yesterday, at 46 years of age, put my footy boots on, come out of 15 years retirement to go and play a game of rugby league against young, fucking hard-fit men. But I'm chasing, and I just get what you just said then. And I've never thought of it that way when you talk about addiction. I obviously am somebody who lives with addiction because I'm chasing a high in my life because I get that wow out of it. I get that I need to do this. I need to train in excess. I need to run not 10Ks today, but I've got to go and do 21 because I need that at the end of it to feel that just exertion, or I need to feel that high off it.
And what you're doing
makes a lot of sense.
Is also filling a void by carrying a message.
Yeah.
And I believe that we're all given a gift. And your gift, even though it comes around in different ways, your gift is today sitting down doing a podcast where not many people can do what you're doing. When I say not many people can do it, everybody can do it, but not many people can do it well.
I do it because I love it, Ron. And I know your story is going to be able to help so many others, and I get high off that.
That's my motivation for doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
My motivation is to do this. I wrote a book while I was in jail. I've been out of jail 10 years now, and I was in jail, and, you know, it's 20 years since I got pinched, and I wrote a book, and I refused to publish it. My wife couldn't read. I'm remarried. I've got a new wife and children. She couldn't read. She started reading it, and it was like, my wife's a squarehead. She's like, fuck, she's never taken a drug in her life. She's never had a fucking cigarette in her life. And she started reading my book, and she had to put it down. She said, it's not you. I don't know who this person is. I have 39-year-old twin daughters that started to read this book, and they said, Dad, I can't read it.
So that obviously tells the sort of man who you are. If your beautiful daughters and wife can't relate to their husband or partner and father, like, my kids know who their dad is, know my past. Now, I look at it this way. You can't hide from the internet's there. If they want to know, they can research it. So why hide anything from your kids?
Yeah.
You're a man who's been raised in such notoriety, violence, and just anger and hatred, I guess, to then the ones that love you looking at you and saying, Dad, this is not you, obviously because you're a loving, compassionate and caring man today.
Yeah, I am.
Like, what a powerful thing, though, to have walked the path that you've walked, and yet those that love you look at you and say, Dad, this is not you.
The scary part is, and I say this with all sincerity, if I don't treat myself, I can be that person again.
Yeah, yep.
That's the truth. That's the truth. If I don't fucking keep tabs on my thinking, because my thinking is where the enemy is. The enemy lives up here. The drugs aren't my problem. I have a thinking problem. And if I start thinking that my thinking is making sense, I'm in trouble. I still have a spiritual advisor that I've been using for 36 years.
Does it scare you, mate, today, being the man? Does it scare you being who you are today, such a kind, caring human, to knowing that, like for me, I know in the back of my mind, and once again, I can relate, you know, like if I'm triggered.
Yeah. One bad decision can fuck everything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
One bad decision. I used to be a bad road rager, and that's a sign that I'm not well. When I'm starting to chase you down the street because you never put your indicator on and telling you, pull over, you fucking dog, I've got some issues.
So you're not aggressive or violent in your daily mindset? It's not something that you wake up and you're dirty on the world and things
never.
So you're just a calm gentleman that's doing your thing.
I love life, mate. I wake up every morning grateful. I wake up every morning, I'm grateful I'm not in the nick. I wake up every morning, I'm grateful I'm not fucking trying to stick a needle in my arm somewhere.
Amen to that one. Amen.
You know, I'm grateful that I'm not harming people today.
Harming, you've helped thousands, and this is something that I can't wait to share.
I've had such a fucking blessing, you know. Do you know when I went to the nick up here in Queensland? See, this is where I believe there's some sort of higher power, and I don't know what it is, and I'm not going to try to call it a name.
Are you spiritual? You just said you had a spiritual advisor. Are you spiritual? And if so, what sense for Ron is spiritual? Because, I mean, obviously we have our believers of Christ and church and Buddhism.
I chased all that stuff. I went to Israel. I walked the path that Jesus walked. I went to Israel because I'm that sort of guy. You can't tell me I've got to go and see it. I've got to go and look and I've got to make my own decision. I went to Israel and I walked the path that Jesus walked, and I've seen where Jesus was crucified and all that stuff. I went to India and learnt meditation in the 80s. I still follow Sanguru. He's another.
I follow him. I find him fascinating in his way of speech.
Some of his stuff is beautiful.
But he talks, and I've sat there with my wife, and I've said, "Did you hear that?"
Yeah.
Some of the things that comes out of his mouth, like you and I sitting down having a conversation, this holy man, this spiritual man who just lives this wholesome life.
And you talk about the bullshit.
But he just lays it on the line, whether it be drugs, whether it be, you know, fornication, whether it be, you know, like the world as it is, the leaders of the world. I actually appreciate him.
Yeah, I love him because of his honesty.
Yeah.
You know? So what happened was I got arrested and I went to R&R, which was horrible, as you know.
It's just
fucking horrible. And then I went to Woodford, which is another shit jail, you know. I escaped from prison in 1977, so they said, "Oh, you can't go to a farm, you're an escapist."
So did you hear your class O carry all that time?
From 1977.
Get I fucked.
Say. Yes. Oh, in Queensland, mate, they go back to 1922. I'm serious.
See, I always thought in New South Wales an E class O you were held for 7 years.
Yeah, not in Queensland, mate. In Queensland, they fucking hold everything. Don't worry about that. Wow. This is fucking Sir Joe Bjelke-Petersen's country. He's still running it. And then I went to a place called Burrellan, and when I got there, it was run by Serco, which is a private
company. Yeah.
And the GM there, his name's Guy Buff, he believed in rehabilitation. And he was talking about trying to open a unit for drug-free. And I just turned up at the time. And there was a bloke in the system who's a pretty bad motherfucker. He's been pinched for a few murders in jail and he's done a leg, you know, he's done 24 years straight.
Yeah, wow.
But he had a lot of power. He wielded a lot of power in the system up here. And he was going in there and he heard about me helping people in the other jails because I was brought NA meetings into jails and I was taking people through the steps and I was trying to teach people how to stay clean. So next thing, this guy sets up a meeting. He goes, "Mate, will you please come and help us?" And I said, "Of course I will." Next thing, I got the general manager saying, "You wound up the general manager's office." I'm like, "What the fuck?" He sits down and goes, "I've heard so much about you. Will you write our program?"
How long was your sentence, Ron, at this stage?
Like, 18 years.
So this is the cocaine blue?
This is the cocaine blue that I'm on
18-year head sentence.
I had an 18-year head sentence, and because I'm federal, it was half mark.
Yep.
I appealed and got a year off the bottom. That's a long story for another day.
Yes.
Because my co-accused had got a smaller sentence than me, and yet he'd been pinched whilst on bail trying to supply cocaine to the undercover copper, and he got a lesser sentence than I did.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Yep. we'll move forward. Move forward for that one.
Yeah, we'll that out. But anyway, so I appealed and said, there's got to be equal justice. You can't give me 18 with a 9 and give that cunt 18 with an 8.
No.
When we're co-accused. He pleaded guilty, I pleaded not guilty, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, the beautiful part of the story is the GM says to me, what do you want? I said, I want a unit that's got no access to the jail.
Okay. Yep.
No one else from any other unit can come into that unit.
So there's no wheeling and dealing and exactly. backhand shit. I said,
and
it's clean.
We get special visits away from the rest of the crims.
Yep.
We get all contact visits with our family up in it. Mate, we're getting those. Everything was happening. It was the grouse.
So you completely minimised any opportunity of any wheeling and dealing inside the jail. So there was no one there that was going to be manipulating the situation.
And my mate, the one that had done the big lagging, he'd been there a long time, he said, and I said to everybody, mate, if you want to use, that's your business, but not in this unit. If you don't want to use, come to the unit and I'll teach you how not to use. Well, we ran that unit for nearly 10 months. Mate, we had a lot of blokes get clean, honestly. The GM used to come down once a month and sit down and have lunch with me in the unit with all the other crims. There's 28 of us in there. I brought a yoga teacher from outside of Sheila with her tight spandex on doing all the yoga, and all the boys were like, fuck, I'm doing yoga, you know, I'm doing yoga.
That's like cordial and biscuits to go to church on a fucking afternoon.
Exactly. And we had all this stuff happening. We had people coming in from outside NA and AA doing meetings in our unit.
Yeah, wow.
Mate, we had the best fucking system. I've got a reference in my...
So was this a medium or a high security?
High security prison.
And you were able to have this happen. This is fantastic.
Mate, I nearly got a convention in there. I'm talking about I got clearance for 200. I've got the paperwork here. I've got clearance for 200 people to come off the street, or with the, had to get clearances from the corrective services to come in and do an NA convention in jail. And what happened? Guy Buff moved on, went back to London. The new G came, killed the whole system.
Fuck.
Killed it. They kicked my mate out, who was the enforcer, because my mate was the enforcer. He'd say, if I catch you using, I'll break your fucking arms.
Yeah.
If you want to use, just put your hand up and say, mate, I
want
to use.
Well, just don't come there. Simple. Don't even come to the unit.
If you're in there and you decide you want to use, just go. Put your hand up and say, mate, I want out.
Yeah.
You know, because you know yourself, once someone's stoned, every cunt wants to get stoned.
Yeah.
As soon as someone sees someone on the night, you can't. Mate, I can spot it 400 miles away.
Mate, honestly, what I've just seen at R&R, like, I literally spent my first month, I wouldn't talk to anybody. I just didn't want to talk to anyone. And it's just me. I did my own jail, and I don't like what I see, but that's jail. You're there. You just so for me, I just sit over here. I'm in the yard train, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but what you do see and what people don't understand is the lengths that people go to get stoned and how the fuck they sit there between the yards doing what they do and verbaling the way they verbal.
Yeah.
My head just spun because I'm going, how do you expect not to get pinched yet you're having shots in front of a camera free out in the fucking
exactly.
Old mates yelling, throw this, throw that, slip this, yeah, make your phone calls. It's all happening. Like, it is red fucking hot.
Yeah, me girl will be here on Thursday.
Oh, bro. Like,
swear, brother.
Then, you sent me a shit shot, cunt, Ray, you fucking cocksucker. Wait. And I'm sitting there just walking the yard training and doing my thing, and I'm thinking, next minute they'll turn around and blame the bloke that was there or had a shot and he's a doggy, give me up. And I'm like, it just,
exactly.
It done my head in.
Yeah. Oh, it's horrifying.
Like, it is bad. It is so bad. People just don't understand in a confined space of, you know, it's bad. And as you say, one gets stoned and the others get jealous. Next minute they're punching on or trying to pump each other because he didn't whack up for this bloke and that bloke didn't get a shot.
And it's sad. It's really sad.
It
and
is.
The sad part is that this is where what we're doing today is part of this, because a lot of the guys that got clean in the system with me are clean today. I got one bloke coming over to my place tomorrow for lunch. He's been clean for 15 years now. I've got another couple of mates of mine that are all up in the 10-year mark that I met in the nick. You know, and that's why I say, going back to jail at 16 years clean, that's how long I was clean then.
So you never once had a tickle the whole time you were in there?
No. No,
completely did it sober.
You can't.
Amazing. Good on
you.
You
can't have one.
Good on. No, I had to ask. I had to ask because you and I both know it's easy to have that conversation. Yeah, I went back in the. Did you have a sly little one just for your remissions, or did you? You know, I made you kick on with it. And for you to do that from a man who had serious addiction, mate, I take my hat off. That's amazing. Good on you.
If I have one, I'm dead. I'll never come back. I'll never come back, mate. I'll never come back. You know, because I was lucky enough to get it once. How many times do you win a lotto?
Yeah, you're lucky if you win it once.
I've won a lotto. Yeah. You know, I mean, I've won a lotto. I've got freedom from active addiction. I've got freedom from self-obsession. I've got freedom from this stupid fucking head up there that still... But today I have the tools. I still get the madness. Don't get me wrong. My head still tells me not bad things. My head tells me I can still go and get a quid this way or go and square up over there or fuck this fucking piece of shit here. My head still tells me that. But what I say to him is then he's like, get the fuck away from me. See, I call my head the pedophile. It's been fucking me since I was a kid. So why would I listen to it? I don't listen to pedophiles. So why would I listen to that fucking thing? Now, when that thing starts to tell me things that are negative and things that are not going to be helpful to my family and myself, I tell it to go away. And if it gets too strong, which it doesn't these days, but if it gets too strong, I ring my spiritual advisor and say, this is what my head's telling me. And then we usually have a laugh and he goes, mate, you're still fucking mad.
That what you just said then is very, very valuable, I think, in this whole conversation and interview that we're having. I don't fucking, sorry, I'm not even going to use it. I don't like that word, interview. We just don't do interviews. This chat, we're having a yarn. I feel better. Don't be scared. Don't be scared to put your hand up and reach out and ask for help.
Exactly.
And what you just said, it just, wow, that has so much value in what we're having a chat about today in reference to, you know, your addiction and wanting to come clean and live a better life and be a better human. Don't be scared to ask for the help.
You've got to be able to ask for help because I'm a really logical person. I keep things really simple. If you are trying to find an answer in your head, right, if you've got a question up here, you haven't got the answer. Because if you had the answer, you wouldn't have the question. It's fucking logic 101. If you have a question up here, you haven't got the answer.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And that's what a lot of people don't understand. I say, mate, it takes courage and humility to say to somebody, I don't know, I need help. It's courageous. It's not a weakness. We were brought up that it was weak to say, I need help. We were brought up to say, I'm afraid. I'm not afraid enough, and motherfucker, I'll blow your head off. Bullshit. Mate, I was afraid walking down the street at night. Fucking, as a kid walking down the street at night, I walked in the middle of the road like that. Fucking ready in case
jumping at shadows.
Yeah. And yet I'd go and do that or do anything else in a heartbeat.
Yes.
But I was scared. I say it all the time. I was a scared little boy.
You have just said my exact words in every Pretty Well interview. And, you know, we talk about me going through club life and just, you know, living that thug life. And
yeah.
And I was a sergeant in arms of a club. I ran the ball up and that was what I did. But at the end of the day, who was I? I was just a scared little boy who was abused and traumatized and tormented.
Exactly.
Protecting myself in a set of colors with a group of brothers or family that I believed had my back.
Yeah.
I today am proud to say I don't need any of that. I am still that man. I will always be that man. But I've been able to raise that scared boy to have courage and strength.
And to be allow yourself to be soft, allow yourself to be vulnerable.
I love being kind. I love loving. I love caring. I love crying. I love hugging.
I love my children.
Love my children.
I've got 39-year-old twin daughters. They've never seen me drunk or stoned.
Beautiful thing.
And, you know, when they were 16, 17, they went to private schools and they had their good upbringing and all that shit, you know. And they say to me at their ballet competitions or their HSC fucking all that shit, Dad, don't embarrass us, don't cry. You know, and I'd be there with the tattoos and the gold and the diamonds and all that shit hanging all over me, you know. Yeah. And they'd say, Dad, don't embarrass me. You know, they're in private schools and Dad, don't embarrass us, don't cry. Don't cry, you know. But, mate, that's the gift I've been given. I couldn't cry at my mother's funeral.
How beautiful is it to have that moment, but to shed that tear and know that that's your beautiful daughters and
yeah.
I've got four children and I cry at the most easiest things of them just because I'm proud that they're not going through the shit I went through and they're not turning out in the way that I was heading at their age. Like my daughter's 15, I'd already done 2 years, you know what I mean? 3 years.
Exactly.
Like,
but It's human to cry.
Yeah.
I'm a human being. Before I was just a human. I wasn't a human being. I was human, but I wasn't being. I was being everything but human. I was a human fucking animal. Because I had no empathy or compassion. I had no care. And I didn't care about me. That's what made me so dangerous. You couldn't hurt me. What are you going to do, knock me? Put me out of me fucking misery. I've said that to the coppers. The coppers had the gun at me and said, what are we going to do with you? And I said, fucking knock me and put me out of me misery. And I really meant it. I really, really, really meant it. I wasn't saying it to be a tough guy. I meant it because I was being genuine. I wanted someone to kill me. I wanted someone to put me out of my misery.
It's pain relieving, isn't it, that thought?
Exactly. That thought is pain relieving.
Yeah.
And that's what makes someone dangerous.
And that's really why is.
Today our society is in trouble because a lot of our kids, this is what my motivation is these days, Simo, is I want to get to the young fellas before they get to where we got to. It's too late. By the time they get to the point where they're in clubs or they're fucking, you know, hooked up with the gangs and that shit, it's too late. They're going to have to run their course. They've got to burn their wick out.
Well, they've also, too, got to find that inner strength to walk away from it when that time comes, because I can guarantee you it doesn't matter who you are. There's no life. There's no gang life. There's no camaraderie. There's no brotherhood anymore. There's no I'm your 5'8 and we're staunch and we're sticking two out. Fucking let's run the ball up. But if you can't stand on your own 2 feet and be proud of who you are and be a good human and, you know, genuinely just be real, then you've fucking got no chance. But
I've been a Lone Ranger nearly my whole life.
How good is it, bud?
I love it.
It is a good thing. But the thing is, until you can accept that and understand what it takes to have that inner strength to be, you got to heal. And I feel, look, you and I will both relate to this. If we walk down the street and we got knocked tomorrow, that was just what it was meant to be. I'm not scared of it, and it doesn't bother me because, you know what I mean, at the end of the day, I've got no skeletons in my closet, and if someone feels that they need retribution for whatever, whenever, mate, go for it. I feel for my children growing up without a dad because of it, but I can't change that. So I'm not going to worry about it, you know what I mean? What I am going to do is I'm going to be the best I can be every day I get up. Every time I look in the face of my children, I'm going to represent me as a good person, as a dad. When I move down the street and I walk past people, I want to smile and say, good day, good morning.
I do it all the time.
How are you? Oh, look at me. I'm the same. I'm 6 foot one, you know, like I'm covered in tats and I'm a burly looking fella that could have a little bit of you can be intimidating to many, you know what I mean? Whereas
100%.
I'm happy to stop and pick your bag up for you or say, excuse me, sorry, mate, is that you? You know what? Are you okay? I don't know you, but mate, are you all right? Like, and I've done it and I'll do it and I love doing it because to me, that's who I am. That's not who I was. Like you said, I'm human today.
Yeah.
And I love being human.
You're a human being, mate. And I'll go out of my way to do the right thing by people, you know what I mean? And I don't want nothing. You know what the nicest part about, I believe, growing up, and that's what all this is?
Yes.
Growing up is caring about other people and being happy with who you are. That's the secret. Once you're content, you don't need something to change the way you feel. If I want to change the way I feel, I look at my kids. I've got a 2-year-old. Mate, I've got a 2-year-old. I'm 67. I've got a 2-year-old.
Nah, you haven't, have you, mate?
Yeah, I've got a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, mate. You know?
Wow.
I've got 8 kids.
Wow, I've got 4. My youngest has just turned 8 and I'm 46, so you're fucking doing good.
you know, I have a wife who's not afraid of me. It's such beautiful. A blessing. My children aren't afraid of me. My 2-year-old fucking stands over me. And I tell her, I say, you know, your dad used to be tough. My wife laughs. I say, you my man was a tough guy once. You know, my little boy, he's nearly seven, and he does his jiu-jitsu and he does his martial arts and I teach him to box and he shoots a rifle, he shoots a bow and arrow, he throws a spear. Because I like all that stuff. I like to hunt. And, you know, and I teach him. Everything about it is, I was taught that weapons were to hurt. I teach my son that weapons are a tool. That's how you feed your family. You know, I go and hunt deer. Last night we ate deer. My son goes, this is the best meat, Dad. Because we eat out of our freezer, which I go and hunt.
Yep.
And I catch fish. My little boy, we went down and caught some Murray cod the other day. I got a photo of him holding up 2 Murray cod. He caught them. And he goes, loser, how many did you catch?
Well, and you'll put back what you don't need. Only take from what you need for your family, to feed your family.
I only take what I need, mate. Yeah. I only kill what we eat.
Yep.
I go up to Northern Territory and I hunt for the Aboriginals and I feed them.
Yep.
I feed them up on some of the missions.
Yes. Yep.
And yeah, but that's another way of giving back.
Speaking of giving back, and I really want you know this to be heard. You, let's just talk about exactly what you're doing today and what you do to give back, because mate, you give a lot.
Yeah, mate. My company is called The Truth About Addiction. It was originally basically made to reach out to people who couldn't go to 12-step programs because of their job or their social standing in society, or whatever, you know. They didn't want to go to 12-step programs because of their anonymity, you're going to be broken or blah, blah, blah. So I started this program, and what it does is teaches people how to live one day at a time without the use of drugs. And, you know, I've got a mate who owns a private detox that one of my eldest daughters, is the manager.
Wow.
She's the nurse there.
How
she's
good.
The head nurse.
So she's an RN?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And she's clean herself. She's in recovery.
Your daughter. So your daughter ended up with addiction as well? Just one of them?
I've got twins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One got into it, and the other one didn't.
Can I just ask you, how do you, I mean, obviously now is good, but at that time, seeing that happening, it must have been heartbreaking. So it was her suppressing her pain and trauma.
I was in the nick. When she got on the gear, because you got to remember, it's 20, no, coke.
Oh, wow.
Coke and the speed and that, but yeah. And so she's been off the gear now for 16 years. And I've got a 16-year-old granddaughter from her, and then I've got a 12-year-old grandson who's playing football. He'll end up by getting signed up with East already. They're already starting to scout around.
He'll be playing against my son. My son's playing Oceanics this week. He's already there, 12, yeah. We've got a carnival these 2 days, this week coming up.
These are the gifts, the gifts we're given.
Yeah.
I try to explain to people, you only have to give up one thing to get everything. And if you continue to use that one thing, you will lose everything. So my program's about helping people learn how to live and cope with their feelings and their thoughts without using whatever drug, chemical, or action that they use to hide the way they feel. I loosely base it around 12-step programs because I can't be there 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even though in the early days when I first take people on, they can ring me 24 hours a day. If they feel like using, they can ring me any time of the day or night and say, mate, I feel like using, and then I'll talk them through it. Yeah. So I'll even get in the car and go down with them and go and get them and pick them up, you know.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be restricted to certain people, but I help everybody. If someone rings up and says, mate, I've got no money, I say, I don't give a fuck.
It'd be very hard, the man that you are and the path that you've walked, to turn someone away, no matter who it would be, if they're genuinely asking for help. I couldn't imagine you doing it.
I don't. Couldn't imagine. I can't. I can't do it, mate. I can't do it.
It wouldn't be in
my account, and my mates will go to me like, are you serious? You spend so many hours. I said, mate, I get paid back tenfold.
But that's genuinality. That's you purely doing it from heart. You're not doing it for an earn or clout. You're doing it purely because you care.
You've got to do it. You can only keep what you've got by giving it away. It's my motto. You can only keep – I went and had a meeting with some people the other day. I wrote a book while I was in jail, and I've never published it. And so I think it's getting to a point where I'm going to publish it. And because a lot of people are saying, publish the book, publish the book, publish the book.
I think it'd be an awesome book to read, mate.
I sat down with a guy yesterday, 2 days ago, and he said to me, what do you want to do? I said, at the back of the book – at the front of the book, I want to put a page that says, please read – if you bought this book today – you may have a problem, or you may have a loved one who has a problem. Please read this book and pass it on.
Yeah.
If you like this book, please pass it on.
Yeah.
If you didn't like this book, please pass it on and email me, and I'll refund you the money of this book.
Yeah.
That's how passionate I'm about it. If they don't like it, I'll pay them the refund of the money.
But please pass it on. The purpose of the book is to give someone else the message that may actually connect with it. Just let it go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you can only keep what you got by giving it away.
Yep.
And that's what it's all about. You know, my book's called The Truth About Nothing. That's what's cool, because our life's nothing. To us, it's something important, but to the society as a whole, it's nothing. Only I feel my pain. Only I fucking got my, you know, I got a saying all the time, why crucify me when we all have our own crosses to bear?
Your cat's got a bit of a problem, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, we talk about pain. I can hear your cat in the background. Wants a bit of love. Look at that. For those who can't see this, look at that. Hey, his love of pussy. His love of I mean, cats.
Never had too many pussies.
You just couldn't walk away from it completely. Good, you mate. You got to have a pussy to stroke at all times.
You
got to
have something there, mate.
Oh dear, I'm not even sorry about that.
Yeah. My grandfather said, as long as I've got a heartbeat, mate, he said, I'll always look at women.
Oh,
I think
dear.
The same. But yeah, mate, so we're just trying to help people, mate. We're trying to get the message out to people. You know, like my mate Russell, you know, that you know.
Russell, yes, Russell. Well, I'll use his name. He's actually just released a book, Russell Mansell. And I,
tomorrow we'll be down there for the signing.
Yeah, we'll put a big shout out to Russ, and I wish him all the very best with the book release. I have had Russell on here, mate. He is somebody who I class as definitely a personal friend. And I know that he's worked very, very hard with Mr. John Killick, who has co-authored this, I believe.
Yep.
And this is not a paid plug. So for guys out there, I haven't even got a copy of the book. But purely on the fact of credit, he deserves to be given a lot of credit for his hard work. And, you know, I've worked with him in assisting people through trauma and abuse. And The Voice of a Survivor is his organisation that he founded, and something he should be very, very proud of. So, Russell Manser, congratulations, mate. You're kicking big goals, and I think we're all behind you and beside you.
His motivation is, mate, everything's about motivation. Everything's about your motives. If I'm coming to your place to have a coffee with you because you're a carpenter and I want you to do some work at my joint, I'm doing business.
Yes.
I'm not your mate.
No.
I'm not coming there to have a coffee because you're my mate and I want to hang out with you. I'm doing business. And I say to people all the time, your motivation is the main reason, is what tells you whether you're going to get it done right or get it done wrong. Because 99% of the time, your motivation will bring you undone.
Yeah.
When you're motivated by greed, ego, and things like that, you will never keep a friendship. When you're motivated by love and caring, you'll always win. I believe that. I really believe that with my whole heart. You know, that's why I always keep saying, you can only keep what you've got by giving it away. People that I look after, I say to them, if you see someone on the street that looks like they're down and out and you can spare $20, take them into McDonald's, buy them a hamburger and give them the change, because the change, they're going to go and buy a bottle of booze.
Yeah, but at least they've got a feed out of it.
First.
Yeah, got something.
The feed. I say to them on the street, mate, I know you're going to go and get stoned.
But let me get your feed.
But I'm going to get you a feed first.
Yeah, good on you.
I'm going to get you a feed first. And I can't deny you your pain.
No.
It's not right of me. But I'm here to help people who want help.
How can we contact you, or, you know, for anybody out there right now that may want to reach out?
If you just Google RonTheTruthAboutAddiction.com, my webpage comes up, or you just... The truth about addiction. As I said to you, mate, I only take on a very small amount of people, because if someone does my program, it's a 30-day program and it's an hour every day for 30 days.
So it's commitment and discipline.
It's commitment and discipline, and it's really high intense fucking therapy.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, you're going to be okay. This is, farting fairies and unicorns. This is, motherfucker, you've got trauma. What was your trauma? We need to deal with your trauma.
Yep.
How are we going to change your thinking? Because people say to me, oh, it's brainwashing. Fucking oath, it's brainwashing. Your brain needs to be washed because it's filthy. Yeah, your thinking needs to be changed because it's a liar. Your thinking's been telling you for years that it's okay to stick a needle in your arm and jump through windows or fucking whatever, when it's not okay. Your thinking tells you that it's okay not to show your wife and kids love and affection. You know, because I say to people, you want to impress me? Put food on the table. Feed your children. You want to impress me? Tell me your wife's not afraid of you. You want to impress me? Show me how well you fucking look after your grandkids.
Yeah.
That's what impresses me.
That's real man. That's gangster shit. That's real man shit.
That's the stuff that impresses me, mate.
Yeah,
Watching you look after your kids, watching a tear come down your eye when you watch your son play football, when you try to talk and you can't even talk because you're choking up. I get that all the time. It pisses me off. My wife just looks at me and I'm trying to explain something to her and I can't talk because I've got tears.
Oh, dear. But I'm no different, mate.
Yeah. And I always come back to the old analogue. I used to be a tough guy once.
And you know, like, that is a tough guy.
Yeah.
The guy that can actually sit there and answer those questions or put into reality those things. That's a tough guy.
Yeah.
You know, or a female, that's a tough woman. And, you know, like, I love to surround myself around quality people like that that are tough and hard people. And that means someone that can just turn to you and say, man, I need to cry. I need a hug. And you know what? Just want to feel human.
Yeah. If you show me the five people you hang around the most, I'll tell you who you are.
Yeah, isn't that a funny thing? I've seen that a couple of times, or the old count back of how many people you can truly go through life and call your true friends on your, you know, one hand. And generally, it's just that one, the big fucking middle finger to fuck you, because there's very few, if any.
The Greeks, I grew up with Greek people, and the Greeks say, before you can call someone your friend, you must eat a bag of salt with them. Now, in Greece, a bag of salt's fucking 20 kilos. Oh, wow. A lot of salt, mate. Yeah. You know, before you can call someone a friend, you have to eat a bag of salt with him. So, you know, I love old people, mate, because they have wisdom. And that's why I'm starting to, you know, I'm 67 years old. I'm 68 this year. I feel like I'm qualified to do my job. I've had 41 years of recovery of being around it. I'm 36 years completely abstinent of any drug. I haven't had a drink since 1986. There's a third of the third 86 that's tattooed on my wrist. I have two dates tattooed on me. The third of the third 86, the 30th of the third 12. That's when I got out of jail last time. And look at both them tattoos and I think, I'll never use again. I'm never going back to fucking jail.
I want to say this, and I'm not going to piss in your pocket, because I know that's something that you see straight through, but I'm going to say it to you. For a man that's lived the life that you've lived, walked what you've walked, to have a memory like you do and speak the way you speak with true, genuine compassion and care and thought, I'm honoured to sit down and have this chat with you today, mate. I truly am, because...
Very humbling, mate.
Wow. Fuck, how do you put it into words? Like, your world was taken from you before you even knew what the world was. And if anything, you were always going to be a killer. You're always going to be killed. You know, addiction was always going to come, whether you knew about it at 17 going into a men's jail or after, you know, that period of coming out of the border. You were destined to be everything that you did. I wonder, and I don't want to be, you know, get too deep in purse, but I wonder how your dad would take seeing you today, if he could look at you and see the man who you are now from the man that he wanted you to be, you know. Look, I just want to put that out there, because I feel, you know, you talk about him in his latter life when your son was passing, you know, and his compassion towards his grandson, but those words that he'd said to you, and, you know, if he could look at the man, and if he could see the heart that you have.
Yeah. I know my mum would be proud. That's what I care about. You know what I mean? I say to my wife all the time, I wish my mum was alive so she could meet you, and I wish my mum was alive so she could meet my kids. Mum would be proud, because she was so disappointed, mate. I used to see the disappointment in her face, because, you know, my mum would come out to visit me in the jail. I'm in jail in Melbourne and she's in Sydney. She'd catch a train all the way to fucking Melbourne, then catch a bus all the way out to whatever boys' home I was in to come and visit me. You know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't come, she would. She'd come all the, you know, she'd fucking catch a train.
And it would have been, this is, you know, this would have been all that your mum would ever have wanted to grow 100%. And see is who you are right now, her grandchildren, what your wife, you happy, you just being a beautiful human and loving your life and not feeling you had to go and knock someone or rob someone to get that respect or that care from someone that really didn't give a fuck, if I can put it bluntly.
Yeah, my wife reminds me of my mother.
Isn't that they say that, bud? They do say that, you know, sometimes
your first love is your mother.
Yeah.
But it's true, my wife reminds me of my mum. My wife's tiny.
Yeah.
fucking hard, mate. Fucking hard.
You're a fuck. You'd be a hard case to be with, mate. You'd have to have a woman there. Imagine having a softy.
I say it all the time. I say, I don't know how you put up with me because I have to put up with me because I have to.
Yeah, you don't have a choice.
Me.
Yeah.
You've got a choice. That's why I say to her, because she always says to me, I'm off my head.
Yeah.
I say, well, you fucking married me. You know, like, I don't know who's off their fucking head. You married me, so, you know.
I give credit where credit's due. I've got to say, you know, my wife, we're 19 years been together. We've got 3 children, and I don't know how. And she's been like yourself. She's stuck with it through thick and thin. And
yeah, mate.
She's a straight 180, just a beautiful, loving, caring. She taught me to love, showed me compassion. I learned it all and was able to re-heal myself through her strength and support. So
I can honestly say this is the first woman I've loved.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing, but hey, how good is it?
First woman I've been faithful to.
Yep.
First woman I've planned to have children with. You know, all my other kids, you know, they're pregnant, go, all right, we'll get married. You know, like, you know, this is the first, mate, I feel like, it sounds crazy. I feel like I'm growing up. At 67 years of age, I feel like I'm becoming an adult. You know, and it's a nice thing because I was such a little fucking brat. You know, right up until the 40s, mate, right until I got pinched. Until I got pinched this time, mate, I still thought that I was something special.
Yeah, you're just another bear bum in the shower, as it was said.
That's it, mate. Another bear bum in the shower room, mate. Because you know what? I had such an arrogance. I thought I was invincible. I thought the law couldn't touch me. You know, mate, I'd go to a restaurant and I'd park me, I had a Mercedes convertible, I'd park it on the footpath out the front, on the footpath.
Not the front of the place, but the actual footpath.
Yeah, on the footpath, because if there's cars parked there, I'd park on the footpath. Were you going to give me a ticket? I didn't give a fuck about the ticket. And my thinking was, I can watch my car and you just can't put the bug on it while I'm sitting there watching it, you fucking dogs.
Yeah, fair call. Yeah.
You know, that's how mad I was.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, you're going to come and put a bug on me car, you fucking dog. You're going to put it in front of me. You know, I was completely fucking mad, you know.
But in all truth, they would have probably had a bug in there anyway.
Of course they would have.
And it wouldn't have been in front of you. It would have been done on the dark. So they got you.
You know. And I'll tell you, this is something that's come to my revelations over the last 20 years was my cockiness, my smart-ass attitude, and me thinking I was fucking so clever, I only had to make one mistake.
Yeah.
And they fucked me.
Yeah.
All the things that I thought I got away with and all the things I got, you know, hot shot, running with the crew, wearing all the jewelry and the fucking, the girls and all the
whole lifestyle. Travel, yeah.
All the fucking lifestyle. When I was sitting back out in the yard.
It's not worth shit.
I was 16 years clean, just got 18 fucking years at 50 years of age. Just got sentenced to 18 years. I'm thinking, well, she's gone. The missus, she's 32 years of age. She's gone. And I told her to go. Let's be honest. You know, that's the sort of person I am. She came out. She waited through all the appeals. And when I lost all my appeals, I said to her, she's a Yank. I said, go back to America. I said, you've got no family here. Take whatever monies we've got left. Go and look after my daughter. Because I had an 8-year-old daughter at that stage. She was 8.
Yeah.
I said, you look after my kid. That's the only thing I say. I said, I don't expect you to fucking not have fucks. I don't expect you not to
Go live your life.
I said, you know, I don't expect you to wait for me. If I get out and you're still there, we'll cross that bridge then. And all my mates were like, I just watched bloke doing it so hard over their girls in jail and ringing their missus up. Where were you? Why didn't you answer the phone? Mate, they're not doing the lagging.
No.
You are.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake, leave them alone. They're out there doing their best. They're trying to feed your kid.
Oh, look, mate,
you know?
I just what my wife has just gone through in the last, you know, 3 months has just been terrific. Heartbreaking because, you know, like we haven't had these hiccups or problems. Life's been good. Like you say, you know, I've had a massive gap and now, you know, it's dragged through all the shit again. And financially, emotionally, like everything, you know, but the trauma on the kids for everything, like everything we tried and have worked very hard to not bring into our home, you know, and they just want to see you fail. And I refuse to lose, and it's as simple as that, mate. I will keep doing what I love, being passionate about, as you are, and very inspiring, Ron. And look, to be told at 50 you got 18 years, mate, a lot of blokes would be just, that's the whack, that's it, it's over, it's done. You know, what am I going to do? So it's it just goes to show.
What you always do, get up and get on with it.
But that's the thing, you know, you've got to find that strength because it ain't always there.
Yeah, you got to have that through having a belief that everything's going to be okay, no matter what. No matter what, everything's going to be okay. And that's what I try to teach in this program of mine. No matter what, don't pick up, everything will get better. I guarantee two things. If you continue to use drugs, your life will get worse. If you stop using drugs, your life will get better. I guarantee that. I guarantee that 100%. It mightn't get everything you want, but it will get fucking better. It will get everything you need. Because using drugs are going to take you nowhere. Jails, institutions, and death.
Guaranteed.
That's what we've got. That's what we've got for fucking using, you know what I mean? And if you get clean, you get the opportunity to make choices that are really, really sane choices. Like just for the day, I'm not going to go and fucking, I'm not going to put a gun in my car and go look for someone I'm dirty on. Just for the day, I'm not going to fucking stick some drugs in my car and drive somewhere where I'm going to get pinched and, you know, just for the day, I'm not going to make all these stupid mistakes, you know? And my just for the day is just for the day I'm going to try to help somebody because I believe I can only keep what I've got by giving it away. You know, and I've been given this gift. It's an incredible gift called recovery, and the recovery is freedom. And you know what the nice part is? Nice to say it before. People say, oh, I got my life given back. I didn't have a life to get back. I got given a whole new life. And that's the beautiful part about my story is that I got given a life that I didn't even know was possible. I didn't know you could love somebody. I didn't know that you didn't have to have a wife that was afraid of you. I didn't know that you could fucking have an argument with somebody and then not have to knock them tomorrow. I didn't know all that stuff. I thought if you had a fight with somebody, then you had to square up. You know, that was what I was taught. You fucking, you know.
Well, if not, they're coming for you. It's one or two ways. Yeah.
You know, I didn't know that you could do all this stuff. I didn't know that you could have forgiveness, empathy, compassion, love, kindness, understanding. And forgiveness, whoa, that's a word that I couldn't even spell.
What's forgiveness? You've never shown to forgive.
I wasn't going to forgive nobody, mate, nobody. You know, I was one of them people that was like, I'd sit in the cell for years digging different holes in different areas in my head. You know, all I did was sit in the cell digging different holes like fucking nah, you know. And today I don't have to do that. Today I don't have to dig holes. It's so nice. I'm too tired. My shoulders are too sore to be digging holes, you know?
I got to say something, mate. You're a handsome fucking man, and you know, you touched on your wife being a lot younger. I can see why. Mate, you look well. You look fit. You look for a man. May I say a recovering addict? Can I say that?
Yes, mate. Yeah, that's exactly what I am. I'm a recovering addict.
Mate, you look great. And I've thoroughly enjoyed sitting down with you today, and I can't thank you enough for sharing with all these wonderful listeners out here on The Clink your story of redemption, because Ron Isherwood, mate, honestly, thank you.
Thanks for your time, Shima.
I really am great, and I've thoroughly, this is one of those ones that I will forever be grateful, and mate, please keep in touch.
I was going to say, you know what, you took the words
out of your mouth. I'd really love to catch up with you and have a proper face-to-face and you're a good man. You're a beautiful man. Keep doing all the wonderful things you're doing. Guys, thank you so much for listening in today. What a fantastic way to end season six. This and it is a double episode. It's just phenomenal. Ron Isherwood, thanks, mate.
Love to the family, mate.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. For the record, lab on me going all the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. For the record.